It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So what if you could remake Pittsburgh's mass transit system without being weighed down by any priorities other than what made the most sense for the user? What was the most efficient? Armed with no more than these stipulations, Squirrel Hill native Ben Sampson went about doing just that. While a grad student at Virginia Tech, Mr. Sampson put together a transportation plan that has gone viral and has people talking about whether it could work. He joins us now in Studio A. Ben Sampson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us is Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. Chris, good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me again.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH at WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. How would you remake Pittsburgh's mass transit system? 412-246-2002, the number to call. So, Ben Sampson, how did you get the idea to do this?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to be in the architecture field, and I always knew that I wanted to work in Pittsburgh. So, of course, when I go to my graduate school and they say, pick any project you want to do for your thesis, my thoughts are, hey, let's tackle Pittsburgh. And, of course, the biggest problem in Pittsburgh right now is its public transportation, at least from an architectural standpoint.
And I think we all have a general idea of what those problems are, but how do you perceive the problems with our mass transit system here in town?
Right. Well, you can start by looking at it a lot of different ways. Let's start at least by thinking about what Pittsburgh is, at least to me. Pittsburgh is a city of communities, these great neighborhoods. They're really walkable. But unfortunately, there is no great transportation system to help stitch these communities together. So the thesis, I guess, was to complete the city as a patchwork by actually stitching the patches together.
And so you tell us about the plan that you came up with. How does it work? What did you envision in your remaking of the mass transit system?
Right. Like you said before, I wasn't weighed down by the idea of costs, and I just
– Which is always always nice.
Yes. Yeah, it is. So basically aiming for the best possible network. It consists basically of six end-to-end lines and one river loop, which connects all of these lines to the waterfronts and brings us back to the reason that we're here, the rivers. And it has roughly 115 stations and 200 miles of track.
And how much would what you're envisioning here, how much would it cost?
Okay. So I've crunched some numbers preliminarily through my thesis, and when you look at it, it's 114 stations, roughly 200 miles of track, at $30 million per mile, which is a pretty rough estimate of what light rail is built in the U.S., it would cost about $6 billion, with a B.
Yeah, which could be problematic. Is there a way to cut some of those costs?
Right. Absolutely. And I looked at this. I spent a long time working out this map. I think that roughly 75% of my map is at grade, so we wouldn't have to tunnel. Tunneling makes it explode in terms of costs. Also, reusing rights of way that we already have, including HOV lanes, the busways, the existing light rail. So all of those things in general would help keep those costs low.
So Chris Sandvig, as you're sitting here listening to this, what are your thoughts? And you know, as you look at this, do you see some feasibility here?
Sure. So first off, I should mention what sort of work PCRG does in transit. We run our Goberg initiative, which really has three primary goals. One is to make transit-oriented development a priority throughout southwestern PA to connect communities to opportunity, develop innovative local financing mechanisms that fund new transit sparks through land development, and creating a growing local source of capital and operating funds to stabilize transit and help it thrive. This sort of approach to looking at what transit could be in the region is an excellent place for us to start a conversation of about what is it we really want from our communities and what's missing from our communities in southwestern Pennsylvania. We have a huge opportunity here because of what Pittsburgh has become in the past 5 to 6 years as sort of a rebirth city and sort of a burgeoning buzz city along the lines of a Portland or someone else like that. To capitalize on that with a transportation system that reconnects communities to opportunity. From our perspective, the price tag of that as put forward in a plan like this is really – a lot of people are probably going to laugh when I say this, but irrelevant. What is relevant is the conversation that we need to have as a region about what sort of transit system is going to enable us to be that world-class buzz city that continues to attract investment into the urban core, that enables job creation, that continues to attract young people who are coming back to the city, and at the same time keeps our seniors and our huge aging population from becoming increasingly isolated from life. I think this creates a perfect starting point for that conversation.
That being said, what good does it do – just playing devil's advocate here but what good does it do to envision something that is, you know, not going to be funded?
Well, I think that's a fair question, and it's also fair because no city in the United States is undertaking anything this aggressive. I think the closest you can find is when you go to China. When I was there a couple of years ago, they were building 5 subway lines at one time in Beijing. So what this really does, though, is it does set a tone for a conversation that we haven't had in southwestern Pennsylvania in a very long time. The conversation around transit in this region has focused around 2 things. One, the Port Authority is bloated and mismanaged. With a union, it has tremendous legacy costs, both of which, by the way, have been significantly addressed, and it is neither is really the case anymore. Number 2, don't cut, don't cut, don't cut. So we know what we don't want from a transit system, but we really haven't talked about what we need from a transit system. We've had some plans that have occurred, but in terms of really looking at it from a systemic perspective, which is what transit is, and I would even throw into there beyond light rail what it is we're going to do with what the workforce of any transit system, which is our buses, and what role urban streetcars, modern urban streetcars would play in somewhere, say, like the Strip District in Lawrenceville, would play in creating a system that connects things together. It's a vital conversation to have in the regions that are actually building transit in the face of financial crises, because there is not a transit agency in this country that is not facing a financial crisis, have had, and they found a way within themselves as a region to invest in those systems.
You mentioned the transportation, mass transit systems that exist out in the West Coast region, Seattle, Portland. I've experienced the one in Seattle. It's amazing. It's cheap for the person taking the transportation. It covers a huge area. How much did it cost for them to do that, and why can't we do something like that here?
Well, that line was also in the billions. A lot of these lines are not cheap. You know, there's an extension of the Denver light rail system to their airport. In fact, they have a massive project called Fast Tracks. It's a public-private partnership. It's in the billions of dollars. They decided at the ballot box that they were going to pay for that. Seattle decided at the ballot box that they were going to find a way to pay for that as well.
Has that ever come up before the voters here? Because if you leave it to the legislature, you know, you're seeing what we're seeing now, which is gridlock.
You're right. And we have a blessing and a curse with funding in Pennsylvania. We have the third highest state level of funding for mass transit in the country behind New York and California. But we really, outside of and in Allegheny County, it's the drink tax, have no mechanisms to raise local sources of capital. If we were to go to the ballot box with a ballot initiative, say, for example, a sales tax, the first thing that we would need, because of how much these things are controlled at the state level, is enabling legislation to even allow us to go to the ballot box. But I will say that once you go to the ballot box, what we have seen in our scan of what's gone on around the country is these transportation, not just rail, but transportation initiatives, win at the ballot box the last election cycle over 75% of them. And they win regardless of whether it's a red region or a blue region. People are overwhelmingly willing to pay for something if they know what they're paying for. And so something like that certainly could work here. If you were just to take what we raised from, say, the RAD tax, even half of that, which is about $85 million a year. Say you did a 20-year bond on it. That's $1.6 billion that you could put towards improving a transit system. That's a lot of miles of rail. But in order for us to do that, we as a region need to decide what our priority is. And that has to come from the community.
We're talking about Ben Sampson's master's thesis about remaking Pittsburgh's transit system, which has gone viral. And Ben is with us along with the gentleman you just heard, Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director of the Pennsylvania Community of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. And our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. Let's go to Julian in East Liberty. Julian, welcome to the
Central. Yeah, how you doing?
Yes.
I was wondering why, seeing that the cost of our budget is so big for our Port Authority here, why don't they just use smaller buses during the daytime for routes that aren't used all that much? And especially during the nighttime when there aren't too many riders, why don't they just switch to smaller buses in the region? And possibly use light rail or something like that, possibly even a railroad like BC to help, help with the transportation.
Chris or Ben, either one of you.
Yeah,
Chris,
sure.
Go ahead.
I'll take a stab at that, Julian. Transit, as you start to dig into this, it gets really interesting and sometimes confusing. But I will say this. The operating cost of a small bus versus a large bus is not that huge. The fuel economy might be a little bit better. That's about it. The Port Authority does change the frequency of bus service, particularly on routes that are not heavy haul routes, which are those, for example, your commuter routes from the suburbs or routes that just don't have that high of ridership outside of rush hour. And that's where you see these routes where you have an hour between schedules. Conversely, that also is very detrimental to maintaining ridership. But because we do have a model where you have to have some form of performance operations in the system as mandated by the state, that is what happens. So you see many fewer buses on, there's a bus that goes by my house. The last bus that goes by my house is at 9 o'clock at night. But the 71A, which is a very, very productive route, runs until 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you for that call, Julian. We appreciate it. Chris, where do we stand in Pittsburgh with some of the more innovative transit proposals out there, like bus rapid transit, for example?
So bus rapid transit is kind of a hard thing, I think, for people to get their heads around in Pittsburgh, which Ben very correctly called out in his presentation, because in terms of pure bus rapid transit, we were a pioneer in that. Our busways are pure bus rapid transit. Bus rapid transit has evolved over the years, and there are now different forms of it. And what is being considered in Oakland to downtown right now is what's referred to as on-street bus rapid transit. There's a hybrid of dedicated lanes and also shared rights of way with cars that's part of this potentially. We have gone through a process, let me first say that there has not been, I would say, a cohesive consensus yet as to whether or not bus rapid transit should be built. There is cohesive agreement about the fact that we should take a very solid, thorough discussion and a look at whether or not we should do bus rapid transit within this corridor, and we're moving on to the next phase of that project. Bus rapid transit certainly has a role in any transit system. In fact, I had the fortune to be in Vancouver a couple of weeks ago, and they have a couple of bus rapid transit lines of their own. That one of their bus rapid transit lines sees ridership that's close to a third of the entire Port Authority's ridership per day, just one bus line.
Wow.
So it certainly has a place. The question is, again, what is our priority as a community? Are we willing to spend that $250 million for bus rapid transit, or are we willing to spend that $1 billion for a light rail? And I think we really, as a community within ourselves, the residents, the stakeholders, the investors within these corridors, need to decide whether or not we want to do that independent of what's going on Grant Street.
Okay. Ben, what has been the reaction to your ideas?
Well, quickly getting back to BRT, bus mm-hmm. rapid transit versus LRT. I looked at that extensively in my thesis, and I think there's two real big differences between them. Number one is that light rail it demonstrates permanence. It's physical. You can look at it. You can say, hey, that's the rail line. And it gives confidence to the people that are buying people that are building, and it just allows people to relax and say, hey, they're not going to cut my bus line because, you know, it's rail. They're going to have to tear it up. There's a lot more permanence to it. And secondly, unfortunately, right now, buses are still kind of codified as negatives, where rail is codified as something positive. And until we change people's minds, fewer of what we call choice riders who don't have to ride transit would much rather choose rail versus buses.
I was asking about reaction to your plan. We're going to go to the phones and sample some of that. We have Lorraine from downtown on the line. Lorraine, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to first congratulate Mr. Sampson on a really innovative, forward-thinking, and brilliant concept. I'm delighted to see that my home neighborhood of Squirrel Hill is on the red line, having lived in Washington once upon a time. But my question, and it's suitable for Election Day, is whether he has had any interest from Councilman Peduto, who I know has been thinking about his possible mayoral position, or from Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald.
Great question. What about it, Ben?
Well, I think Peduto's probably really tired of me by now because, yeah, there have been hundreds of tweets going his way about this, and it's been shared on Facebook on his page, and I'm sure he's probably tired of having it. But keep pushing for it. The more people that tell him we need this, I think the better off we'll be.
Let's go to Robin in Murraysville. Robin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to tell you about how I moved back home to Murraysville, Pennsylvania from Washington, D.C., where I worked for about 30 years and watched the population growth get away from them. They didn't invest in the railway system that they have, which was wonderful when I first moved down there. So I come home to Murraysville, and it's got a rail line going through it, and I'm thinking, what a perfect little town to have a light rail station, and it would boost Murraysville economy. Because here we would be ahead of the growth from coming out from Pittsburgh. And I just want to say $6 billion is nothing. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you, Robin. What about Robin's idea, gentlemen? Well,
absolutely. I think Pittsburgh's really at a big turning point now. When I started my thesis in 2011, there were just some preliminary findings that Pittsburgh was getting younger for the first time in half a century, and it was finally growing. So I think what you're talking about, smart growth, is essential for how we move forward as a community, as a city, and as a region. The idea of doing this thesis, everybody says, why now, why now? Pittsburgh can't afford anything. And the answer to that is that now is the absolute best time to start doing this. We don't want to start building these transit lines in response to what our needs are, and doing it piecemeal and not actually being able to build what we want. But we need a comprehensive vision of the future and capture this smart growth, which you mentioned.
Yeah, if I could just add on to that, I grew up in Murraysville, and I believe she's referring to the Turtle Creek Railroad, which parallels 22 through there. Being gone around to D.C. and other areas, one of the things that strikes me as we talk about, you know, rail to suburban locations like a Murraysville is there's a difference in the land use patterns, and that's why it's so important, particularly with transit and even with our transportation system. And some could argue this is why we have a funding crisis to begin with, is that we have not tied land use patterns to sound investment in transportation assets that are very capital intensive and are very maintenance intensive. In the case of Murraysville, the land use form is not super conducive to high ridership for transit of any sort other than perhaps commuter. And when you go to places like D.C. and you go to the outlying stations of the Red Line or the Yellow Line, the ones that are beyond the Beltway, a lot of those stations around them have reconfigured their suburban communities so that they're walkable, so that they have bicycle trails, so that people can live a life without a car. And in fact, some of the stations, because the market is so strong, you kind of see these micro cities spring up around the stations. And that's kind of, if you're going to bring rail to somewhere like Murraysville, conversely, needs to be working with developers to show, you know, the value of creating this sort of development, which, by the way, also makes more money for developers than standard tract housing. And it's also something we need to do locally because increasingly people like Ben, young professionals looking for somewhere to live, they're looking at a quality of life before they're looking at where the job is. And Pittsburgh provides a tremendous quality of life. We're also seeing a decrease in car ridership, car usership, and car ownership nationwide and in Pittsburgh as well. And if we are not investing in a system like this, we're going to be left behind going forward as the economy continues to recover. Crisis is the perfect time to be talking about the opportunity to transform and reform. And that's what we really need to do.
Ben Sampson's master's thesis about remaking Pittsburgh's transit system has gone viral. And Chris Zandvig is regional policy director of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group, joining us to have a conversation in Studio A. Thanks to both of you for joining us. And congratulations, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris talks to the host of Startup. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.